welcome to the Cory Doctorow podcast. I may sound a little different, and that has something to do with why we didn't get a podcast last week. It turns out that my long, much-beloved Plantronics headset finally bit the dust last week, so after recording the podcast, John, my sound editor, is now snowed in there in D.C., couldn't get anything useful out of it. And I tried recording it a couple times, and we just concluded that that Plantronics was kaput. So I have some very lovely new kit that you're probably hearing some benefit from right now. It's a Samson mic and a brand new shock cage for it. Next week I should have a boom, which should isolate any of the clicking sounds or tapping you might hear reverberating up from my desk where it now sits. So that should be arriving either today or tomorrow, and you'll hear its benefit next week. I'm getting quite a nice little sound setup here in my office. Speaking of good new technology, I also got a mouse next week that I'm very happy about. This is the kind of thing that excites me, mice. I got this Logitech Anywhere mouse after hearing about it on the Security Now podcast, where they were extolling its many virtues, and it has many. I'm actually reviewing it for Boing Boing. Be up next week, but the thing I like most is this. You hear that click? It's like I don't know if it carries through on the mic, but that sound and the feel of it, it's like a scalpel being set down in a surgeon's tray by a nurse assistant. I mean, it's like the equivalent of a Mercedes door thunk. There's also other things to like about the Logitech Anywhere mouse, apart from the click sound, and those are all written up in the review that'll go up next Tuesday. Or Monday, I forget when I scheduled it for on Boing Boing. But I'm really happy with it. I get and buy and review a lot of gadgets, but I don't often say nice things about them. I'm pretty stern about my gadgets. I bought this one for full price and have been absolutely delighted with it. It's a rare thing for me. So a couple of weeks worth of news to catch up on here. Last week I was in Austria, specifically in Graz, for the Creative Industries Conference, where I gave a keynote. That audio should be online soon. It was called How to Kill the Arts, or How to Destroy Culture, and that's it. And I'm off to Zurich tomorrow, Tuesday, for the Google faculty meeting, where I'm going to be giving kind of a variation on that, but more geared to academics. My daughter, Poesy, turned 2 last week, and we had a really nice day on Wednesday. We took her out of school at lunchtime, went down to the Fortnum & Mason ice cream counter, which is a very posh and wonderful ice cream place in London, and had big indulgent sundaes, and then went back to the daycare for carob cake with candles and all the kids singing. It was really fun. So today I'm going to read to you a short story called Sensored, S-E-N-S-O-R-E-D. This was commissioned by the Open University for a ubiquitous computing program that they're offering this year. And they have very graciously allowed me to make it Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike. I'll be putting the text up online shortly too. It's one of several writing projects that I'm near a completion on. I'm now in the middle of writing Shannon's Law, my young adult short story for the new Borderlands anthology. And I have just finished Clockwork Fagin. This is my steampunk young adult story that you may have heard me talking about here. It's for an anthology being edited by Kelly Link and Gavin Grant. I haven't heard from Gavin yet on it, but I think you'll like it. And that's what I'm going to read to you next once I finish Sensor. It's starting next week. And then after that, I'll read you the story I'm working on now, Shannon's Law. The other writing projects I've got in my queue here, I'm writing a report today on the 7th meeting on ACTA, the Anti-Counterfeiting Trade Agreement. And that's for the Information Week subsite, Internet Evolution. And then I'm working on a submission for Ofcom, the telecoms regulator here, on the BBC's proposal to add DRM to its high-def programming. After that, I've got a short story to write for Shareable.net, which they've commissioned for me. And then all my freelance assignments are clear, and barring someone coming along with a truly stupendous amount of money, I'm not taking any more freelance assignments until I finish my next book, Pirate Cinema, which I will be working on, I hope, very soon, and which will be my third young adult novel. Anyway, that's enough of that. Sorry again for missing you last week. If you heard that nice, precise click of the mouse, it's because I have just switched windows to Sensored, written for the Open University. And here goes my reading of Sensored. Sensored by Cory Doctorow. You know I cherish the fact that I have lived my entire 21 years in this country without ever learning a single thing about footy, right? Sarah called out to Raj as they cycled down the towpath on bikes they'd found and hired near the old street roundabout. Skinny tensegrity things that creaked and clittered beneath their weight as the harp strings that held the ferry frame together flexed according to a billion precise computations, holding the whole thing together. You understand what a sacrifice I'm making for you? She'd let Raj drag her out to the pitch after he'd agreed to come to the sensor art exhibition at the V&A the previous weekend. He was riding behind her, and she couldn't make out his response, but she batted the instant replay built into her helmet, and it plucked the words out of the noise. Love it! There's nothing like football on a Saturday! She'd had to admit the pitch was impressive. Just the day before, it had been a building site, but the league had leased it for the day and swarmed it with sensors and laid down artificial sod that compensated for irregularities in the earth. Sarah and Raj left the bikes leaning against the fence rail and waved goodbye to them, ensuring they faced the camera on the bikes' noses so that the hire bike co-op knew that they were done with them. Then they joined the scrum of football fans, who were jumping up and down to get their faces in the field of view of the camera booth. Raj, who was 5 centimeters shorter than Sarah, had bought the tickets that morning, and he grumbled as he shoved up toward the booth. But he returned grinning a few seconds later, holding 2 square pieces of beechwood laser engraved with a crisp 2D barcode. Come on, he said, handing one to her. Let's get a good spot. They went up the temporary steps and into the building's site scaffolding, and then made their way along it, threading around fans who'd already claimed spots. They went up one more flight, then Raj declared that they had a great place. They held up their seats for a second, turning them this way and that, until their semicodes had been read by the sensors, then clipped them to the tube steel of the scaffold. The seats wobbled for a moment as they tightened themselves, then snapped firmly into horizontal and vibrated briefly. They settled themselves in. Raj held up 2 fingers and mimed drinking, and a few minutes later the lager butcher came by, lugging a cooler and passed him 2 tins. Raj opened up one and handed it to Sarah, then opened up one for himself and took a long swallow. Ah, he said. Football. Sarah thought she'd been doing a pretty good job of following the match, right up to the penalty kick. She'd had her phone out, and she'd let Raj download a couple of apps that made sense of all the telemetry coming off the pitch. There was the accelerometer in the ball, the CCTV's calculations on the positions of all the players, and an endless array of statistical overlays showing graphs, charts, and tables indicating how the players stacked up against each other for kicks, pitch covered, interceptions, and a variety of exotic football gubbins that she only dimly understood. But in principle, she was following the match, especially when she alternated between watching the annotated wireframes and the actual pitch, holding her phone up at eye height so that she could switch back and forth, the way the hardcore fans were doing. Some even had special hats with phone harnesses, all done up in team colors that held the phones at the right level, leaving their hands free for lager and waving noisemakers. She wasn't watching the pitch when the player from the Neasden Nudgers fouled the player from the Hoxton Humpers. She was looking at the wireframe, where 2 stick figures collided, then 1 dropped to the ground. But she heard the foul, a great bestial roar that went up from the temporary bleachers, fans leaping to their feet and rattling the scaffolding and screaming their disapproval. The sound was both terrifying and exhilarating, and Raj was on his feet, shouting along with them, but he caught her eye and winked at her and pulled her up, and she added her throat to the roar, which felt better than she wanted to admit. And then the dust settled, and the humper was gearing up for his penalty kick, staring down the goalie, and yes, this was football, she understood, this tightness in your chest, and the feeling of your fingertips digging into your palms as the player took a step, 2 steps, then kicked, and the ball sailed for the net as the goalie leapt for it, and she could see that he might make the save, but then his fingertips only grazed the ball, but he seemed to grow another inch and batted out just before it crossed the crease of his net. He'd saved it. The ref held up his hand to affirm it, and the fans went insane. No way, Raj squawked. He pointed a fist at the ref and screamed something obscene, but she couldn't make it out, not with all the screaming. All through the stands, fans were waving their phones at each other, and she glanced at hers and hit the replay button and then again and zoomed in until the phone warned her that at this magnification it was only guessing and she couldn't tell. Had the ball gone in? Hadn't it? She sat down primly and waited for the rest to do the same, But they weren't. A chant was growing in the stands, growing louder by the second, and the rhythmic stamping was rocking the scaffolding, and she could feel its tensegrity cables realigning themselves, an over-tightened guitar string feeling as they sought to compute the tension that would damp down the alarming sway of the makeshift bleachers. She chanced to look down over the side, the 10-meter drop, and saw the people on the stories below angrily leaning forward, waving their arms at the ref. Then someone fell. Just from the first story, a young man in athletic wear with the Humpers logo painted on his shaved head. He caught himself on a piece of tube steel and dropped lithely to the turf. He looked back at his mates, a triumphant grin on his face, and he ran off down pitch, and a moment later, hundreds of fans were on the turf, in a writhing, boiling churn of arms and legs. She pulled back, horrified, and caught Raj's arm. He was wide-eyed, not shouting anymore, looking as scared as she felt. "We have to get out of here," he shouted in her ear. She nodded. They left their seats clipped to the scaffolding and set off down the narrow walkway, trying not to push or be pushed in the frightened exodus that snaked its way toward the narrow staircase. Sarah chanced to look at her phone and saw the pitch, still in wireframe, with numbered pixels for each fan and player in the riot, each one trailing a comet tail of ghost pixels showing where it had been. The street around the stadium was eerily calm. As they streamed out of the building site, tightly holding hands to keep together in the straining crowd, they popped free of the chain-link fence and into the cool air and empty road. They crossed the road, moving away from the crowd, and leaned against a wall, catching their breath. Now that her ears had adjusted to the quiet, Sarah heard a distant siren, then another, then the sirens grew louder. "We have to go," Raj said. His eyes were bleary. How many tins of lager had he drunk? 4? 5? "We'll never get a taxi," she said, not adding, "and you're in no shape to ride a bike." She was suddenly and irrationally furious with Raj for getting her into this mess. The parking enforcement CCTVs set into the curbs began to visibly swivel in their shatterproof bubble housings, sweeping to take in the whole street. She grabbed his arm and began walking briskly, but they'd barely made it to the next corner when there was a roar and the rioters from the stadium filled the street. There was the sound of broken glass, and she looked over her shoulder in time to see two men, boys, just kids, running up and over a parked car, crumpling the fiberglass bonnet under their weight. They ran. The sirens were very loud now. They rounded the corner into the high street and found themselves facing four policemen, just piling out of a transport car, the cameras on their helmets glinting in the gray afternoon light, perspex shields forming a line across the road. "Kettled," Raj said, and spun on his heel before the police could do more than glare at them. He was looking much more sober now, and more scared. They found themselves back among the rioters, the streets calm, shattered. Sarah glanced again at her phone, but it was reading no signal. "They shut off our mobiles," she said to Raj, as they sheltered in a newsagent's doorway. "No," he said, pointing, "it's that lot." Three grinning boys stood by the gate, furiously cranking away at the handle on a homemade box. "Is that an electrical generator?" It was a bizarre sight. "No," Raj said. "Well, sort of. Spark gap transmitter. The original radio. So long as they keep cranking that, nothing wireless will be able to transmit within its range. Means that none of these cameras or sensors are talking to each other anymore." She shivered. This lot had come ready for mischief. There was fighting now, and shouts, and more broken glass as shops' windows were shattered. Screams. She'd designed little network toys for exhibitions, using the same sensors and cameras as had been strewn around the pitch and set over the shop doors. They all had a little memory, a small buffer that could record 10 or 20 seconds worth of data before they started to dump their untransmitted payloads. "The police, too?" Raj cocked his head. "Even the ultra-wideband stuff will have trouble with that thing. There's no noise floor to sink under, not with a dirty monster like that running." Raj didn't often slip into electrical engineering ease, but he was under a lot of stress. She got the gist of things anyway. Two young men, 17 or 18, slipped into the doorway with them, jostling them unmindfully, then giggled when they saw two boys wearing nudger's scarves tear past. Then they ducked out and headed in the opposite direction, for all the world like schoolboys playing hide-and-go-seek. "We've got to get out of here," she said. And then the sky was filled with spinning maple keys, whirring softly as they spun around and around like whirligigs. Half a second later, she saw the coppers on the roofs around them, tossing handfuls of the little electric eyes into the air. She picked one up and saw that it had a little fisheye optic and a couple of gigs of RAM on the stem of the key. Instantly, she understood. "They're getting a snapshot of the site," she said. "That must mean that they were getting ready to..." the sound of boots tramping, of truncheons on shields, and the police kettle tightened. The courtroom scene gave her the oddest feeling of déjà vu. The ombudsman walked through the cells with a phone, waving its eye at the faces of the miserable crowd. The ombudsman, a woman barely older than Sarah, nodded at her and took her back to another room, where Raj was already waiting, standing up against a wall with a group of miserable sods, some of whom had black eyes or arms in slings. "Right," the ombudsman said, pointing to the wall screen. "Can you all see this? Good. Right." She made a firing gesture at it, and it began to flit through a series of slides. "Right. You are all here because the QC says he doesn't have enough information to guarantee the charge." She made a pinch gesture in the air, and the current slide zoomed up. It was Raj, leaning over the edge of the scaffolding, fist raised, shouting. Sarah shot him a glare. He had the grace to look ashamed. A warning appeared in the corner. "Interpolated image cannot be verified." And Sarah understood. This wasn't what the camera saw. This is what it guessed at, and guesses weren't admissible in court. "So here's the deal. Any of you who want to go free, this gentleman from the Met there will write you an ASBO barring you from footy matches for a period of 24 months. There was a choked sound of outrage from some of the fans, particularly the ones in team colors. And you go home. The alternative is that you go to court and face prosecution. Sarah's stomach roiled. 5 minutes ago, she would have sworn that she never wanted to go to another sporting event of any kind for the rest of her life. But this, it was so unfair. She swallowed back the acid in her throat. "I'm in," she said, and faced the camera so that the PC could photograph her for the ASBO. All right, that's it. Talk to you next week, where I'll be reading to you from Clockwork Fagan.
You've been listening to the Cory Doctorow Podcast, licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Sharealike US 3.0. Or as Woody Guthrie put it in another context, this song is copyrighted in the US under Seal of Copyright 154085 for a period of 28 years, and anyone caught singing it without our permission will be a mighty good friend of ourn, because we don't give a dern. Publish it, write it, sing it, swing to it, yodel it, we wrote it, that's all we wanted to do. Many thanks to John Taylor Williams for mastering. That's Ryneck Studio, W-R-Y-N-E-C-K Studio, @gmail.com. John Taylor Williams is a full-time self-employed audio engineer, producer, composer, and sound designer. In his free time, he makes beer, jewelry, odd musical instruments, and furniture. He likes to meditate, to read, and to cook. Talk to you next week.